space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the starship Enterprise. Its five-year mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life, a new civilization, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Greetings, salutations, and welcome to Retrek. I'm Captain Jim, and with me, of course, are Admiral Elliot.
Hi there.
And Dr. Squee.
Drag on with your bad self.
And we're here to talk about the next two episodes of Star Trek Prodigy. This week, it's episodes, 5 and 6?
Yeah.
Which is Observer's Paradox and Imposter Syndrome. And I think I'm right in saying this is the first time in our coverage of Prodigy that we've all seen up to the end of the season now.
Yeah, I finished it last night.
So there we go. But we are going to keep the spoilers out of it. We're going to talk as though these are the only episodes we've seen. And
at least I know if I do sleep, I'm not spoiling anything for anyone, but I didn't manage to so far.
I know it's been nice to be able to sort of binge on it, and we're still going to go back and watch them all several times because of how we're doing the show. But in a way, I miss that we have at the end of a normal show where we go, oh, what's going to happen next week and all our theories, because we can't do that now.
It's been kind of fun to live vicariously through you guys who hadn't watched too much ahead, because like you were coming up with theories and it's like I knew the answer. I could sort of cast my mind back, but it was kind of nice that some of us hadn't, even if I had. So now we're all up
to it's a weird thing with streaming, isn't it, and people watching it at different paces. But the good thing is with these podcasts now, you know, being immortalized forever, people in the future will be able to listen to it and catch up on it, and Prodigy will still be out. So for anyone who is listening to this in the future, Prodigy was a TV show till they cancelled it.
After 20 seasons, because it got renewed on Netflix.
Let's hope so.
Let's hope so. Especially after it's winning awards.
and if that didn't happen, future people, I want a word with you. Why did you make this happen? We did our bit. We've watched it multiple times already. We're still watching it multiple times.
Yeah, the stand against Netflix begins right here.
And I've got to say, like, considering what this is 5 and 6 we're talking about today, and like the amount of plot they've already got through, this is what I'm talking about with this show. It's just like some shows could have made that the whole series plot arc, what we've kind of dealt with, and just pretty much rounded off. They're just getting warmed up here. Like it's just started cooking on a whole new level at this stage. And it's just,
The thing, like having watched it all now, I can honestly say these early episodes, while they're good, they're not even scratching the surface of where we're going to go this season. So stick around for the coverage of it, because it does just get better and better, this show.
It does.
I mean, I couldn't believe it that after 4 episodes, they'd already sort of got the protostar. Like it's gone into a wormhole, but they've already come back to this time. That's gone there. Like they've already crossed past that bit, and they didn't just wrap it up there. They what I love about kind of like Star Trek, and like it happened with the Orville as well. I like it when they, you know what happens. You know the timeline's got to get reset, so you know exactly what's going to happen, except you don't anymore. Because it was in the Orville, they had this episode where someone went back in, a younger version of the First Officer got taken out of her time when she was younger to the current day. Didn't like what she saw. She got sent back like with her mind wiped, so everything would happen the way it was meant to. And she then didn't. She then didn't do what she was meant to do because the mind work didn't work, and it created this whole extra can of worms, which was really interesting. And that's what Prodigy is doing. It's like, what if we don't wrap it up? What if we have to solve it another way? What if we have to make it more complicated? And it feels like that's new, and I really love that.
Yeah, this is the first time, like, we've done time paradoxes, and we've done time travel, and we've done temporal incursions, and we've done all of that.
I think the majority of all the time
we did,
between season two and three of Discovery.
We did,
And I think most of them are in this series of Prodigy.
And that's the thing. This is the first time we've done a whole season on one. I know there's other threads come into it, but it's the first time we've done a whole season on one time problem. Though, to be fair, if Ronald D. Moore had his way, the Year of Hell would have been a whole season, and we would have done that. But alas, that was not to be. But if you want to check out what Ronald D. Moore does when he does get his own way, watch Battlestar Galactica. It's awesome.
It is amazing.
Or For All Mankind, which is
awesome. Or For All Mankind, yeah. Or so if you just want to watch a load of shagging, watch Outlander. So there you go. Basically, whatever Ronald D. Moore's got you covered. Whatever you want to watch.
I mean, there was quite a degree of shagging in modern Battlestar Galactica as well.
Yeah, but you didn't see Outlander.
Well, half the people couldn't see nothing when someone's being shagged.
Anyway. Let's get back to Prodigy then. So, Observer's Paradox. So, we pick up right where we left off. And we get, I love scenes where they do debriefs and it cuts between the different people. Don't know why, it's just a filmic device that I've always really enjoyed, where you'll have them ask a question to one person and then it'll cut and it'll be someone else answering the same question. And effectively, you get one conversation, but there's about six different participants. I just really love it as a device.
They do it in Dr. Bashir, I presume.
Yeah, they do it in that. They used to do it in Buffy a lot. It's one of them things that you can only really do on TV. Like, you couldn't really do it in a novel. You'd radio, it'd be very tricky to do it because you'd have to rely on listening to the different voices. So it is something that only really works in this medium
with it.
Yeah, and I love it.
And it's so lovely in this one where you've got like most of them just trying to get their story out of like what happened. It's not my, like, we didn't mean to do it. And then you've got Rock just going, it's like, I was against all of it. I tried to stop him. And then Murph is going into our whole theater production. It's so delicious. So nice.
I think the one that's like the most significant is that you've got Gwyn sort of feeling guilty about it almost. Like, they've rescued her.
They saved me.
Yeah, but she's been saved and then she's realized, oh, but it might have destroyed the universe, possibly. Okay. Though, to be fair, the saving her was something they did after they might have destroyed the universe. So, you know, that she shouldn't feel bad about it.
There's a lot more of this as we go on, but I also love that they've woven throughout this series the fact that the crew of the New Voyager do have so much respect for them. They do they do appreciate what they've done. It's not just like, these kids just getting in the way. Like, usually by this stage, they would just be sort of like
game. They realize that these have survived and they've run a starship. You can't treat them like normal cadets. There's something extra about them.
They've got valor to them. They appreciate the valor. That's what I like about them. It's like Janeway and the first officer, whose name I keep forgetting, but he was in Hamilton. He was excellent. He's a great actor. He's one of these people who's been in films and TV.
Yeah, I recognize his voice, but I can't place him.
He delivers such a blinding performance. And it's like, trying to remember which race he is. Is he a race which we've seen?
He's a thingy, isn't he? Andorian.
And Dorian, but it's like there's a kind of sort of like it's almost a Vulcan edge to the way he plays it, which is
really almost nice. Sort of heavily steeped in like not quite sarcasm, but this air of derision with everything that he says. But you can tell there's a heart beneath it, I suppose.
And I just think again, it's another one of these ones where they kind of set themselves apart from the other shows of having that admiration of like. Any other time, they'd be basically in the shit and maybe one of the crew would be voting for them and trying to kind of like, maybe Picard would be giving an inspiring speech to Starfleet why you can't throw them to the wolves. Whereas, like, it feels like Janeway's got control of the situation that they...
Yeah, I do want to call that out a little bit, though, because, like, you get a bit of justification and, you know, like you say, they bring up all this stuff about how well they've done and... all that business, and Janeway says it was an accident, and we all share the blame. It's like,
but she also says that 24 hours earlier, we were all going to go do this.
True.
Sorry,
I lost sound for a bit. I was having connection problems.
Oh, yeah, which is those things. After you, mate.
Yeah, I was like, what I like is the crew were having a go a bit at them for what they've done. And Janeway points out, look, you were all up for doing this. Mm. We were going to go against orders and we were going to go do this 24 hours ago. So don't be too harsh on them for going against orders.
I still think it's very forgiving considering that they might have just destroyed the universe. You know,
well, I
get it and I get we've got to move past it, but I do feel like,
I bring in what Elliot said before, though, with the other week, which I sort of like, I agree with, but not like you said that you felt that Janeway perfectly set this up. I think she did, but I don't think she expected them to do what they did when they did it. And so, which was by accident. I think she wanted to bring them in. I don't think she wanted them to spy on them or anything. I think they just basically brought ahead what she was planning on doing.
Yeah.
Otherwise, there's no reason to bring them on the ship.
She was being ordered by Jericho to scrap the mission. And I think that we were seeing that, and that sort of explains, this makes sense why she's brought them along, because she can manipulate them into going when she wants them to go, but circumstances just meant that they went earlier. So she is going to be very lenient because she knows what she was planning.
Yeah, I can buy that if it's Janeway. Yeah, that's what I would have done, so I can't really... So that she's kind of reprimanding herself rather than them, I suppose. Yeah, I can.
I'd even throw in.
This is a
good way in which they've. I think the version of Janeway they're doing totally matches with everything we've seen before from Janeway. However, Admiral Janeway, the slightly older Janeway, which separates her even from the hologram, I think has learned to be a bit more lenient. And maybe even some of that went into the hologram. That's why she was. Maybe a little bit more forgiving of them than perhaps Janeway from Voyager might have been, I feel. What we got? Mm-hmm. They have to go a little easier on them for the kids' show parameters. I think in a normal Star Trek show, they'd be in the shit. I genuinely think this is purposeful. I think even if it was...
I do agree with that. I think this is a concession to it being a kids' show. It's a little too pat.
There's maybe a bit of both.
I'd agree with that. Yeah,
I think there's a bit of both that you've got the kids show parameters, but I think there's also more in it. Why?
Yeah,
I think you can read it. I think there's enough for adults to read it and go, yeah, I can go along with that. But I do think the reason is that we want to set ourselves off on this adventure and we can't have the crew locked up, you know. I think there is a concession to it.
Stuff later in the series, which again, I don't want to preempt too much, but there'll be definitely stuff later in the series which I think you only get away with because it's animated. However, this I think it's, like Elliot says, a bit.
The Doctor throws out a reference to the crew of the Cerritos, which I thought was nice. Yeah.
I thought this was great, the delivery as well, the most unruly crew I've seen since.
But it tells us that the Cerritos has always been bad because this is set before Lower Decks. This is set before, isn't it?
First season of Lower Decks was 2380. This is 2383.
Oh, there we go. Then I stand corrected. I had it the wrong way around.
Later series might match with this now.
The later series, because we're now coming up to season 5, if we do normals, how we shoot with Star Trek shows, every show is a year.
Mm-hmm.
So the last season of Lower Decks is a year in front of this now.
Right, that makes sense.
But there's time for the Doctor to have met them, etc.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't realise they were that close together. I had it in my head for some reason. Anyway... so now we kick off like the next sort of phase of the story, which is Murph making this kind of mural thing. And this is the clue that they're going to have to work out and follow. And that's going to set sort of the next arc really into place. And this is where you get Dal going, no, well, we made a mess, so we need to fix it. And it is almost that sort of Harry Potter thing where you're going, just tell the teachers. Why aren't you telling the teachers all this stuff's going on?
They cover it.
You have also got, like, from season one, these were brought up on a prison planet. They were prisoners.
Yeah, they were.
They didn't have adults to run to. They've found the ship. They've survived, we have to assume, for the best part of a year in this ship on the own. So these,
no, I get it. And it, so and it
as,
works.
As a group of, like, the teenagers, but they're a lot more self-dependent than what you'd expect of a contemporary teenager because of the circumstances they've come from. So I think it's perfectly understandable that is there.
I think it's understandable for these characters in this context. But taking a step back from it, you're like, you know, come on, you're part of a crew now. You know, we should all be working together for this instead of going rogue.
They sort of do cover some of the reasons why they don't. I forget the reasons they list. The one which I sort of expected to be highlighted a bit more was maybe not putting Janeway in that position of, because she's in a position where she has to follow orders, whereas they can sort of sidestep this. And I think there was a degree where they're accepting that it's like they may never get in Starfleet as a result of this. I saw one of them to mention that because it feels like that's a really strong motivator. I think they are so grateful to Janeway, and that definitely comes across. That's why they don't want to put her in this position.
This actually, this is a slight diversion, really, but it's something that I've thought about lots, and I kind of wanted to do like a study of at university, but never could quite formulate enough. But I think there is a subgenre within fiction, and there isn't a name for it that I'm aware of, but effectively, it's a subgenre where you have children or teenagers, and through a combination of circumstances, they become the fulcrum around which that universe turns, and they are the only ones who can fix usually a greater and more existential threat that the adults are usually either unaware of or unable to affect directly. And you used to get a lot of this in the 80s, things like E.T. and The Goonies, and Stephen King's It is a good example, or at least the early part of it. And I think Prodigy falls into whatever we're going to call this subgenre that I've identified. Well, it's not MacGuffins, really, but yeah, Peter Panism was a suggestion that someone gave me, but I don't think it quite fits. But yeah, so Prodigy very much becomes that you've got this broader adult world, but we're focused on the children now, who are the most important part of it, even though the adults may not necessarily see that.
Well, that's very much Famous Five, isn't it?
Yeah. So that would fit into it as well.
My feelings on this was as well. So I think they've done a really nice job all throughout these first two seasons of finding reasons why sort of they are put in center of the action. Why, even though they've kind of like just found this ship, why they get to stay on the ship, why they get to then be part of another ship. Like they plotted it very well.
Yeah, they have.
And why they get to be center of the attention. And even at the end of the series, I don't want to foreshadow too much, but I like the fact they've come up with a permanent solution now, because I feel like there's only so long you can keep on coming up with excuses why they have without getting a permanent reason. And they do that by the end. But I just think it's very impressive writing. This writing is so tight, and their attention to detail and everything. Like the, sorry to jump a little bit, but like the scene where you first introduced the whale, and I just love the Rock's line of like, oh, don't even get me started, Karen. You know, like, I don't know where to start.
Ah, well, let's talk about
Karen,
the whale.
Sorry, not Karen.
Can
I finish what I'm saying, though? Whatever she, sorry, I forget the name, but it's like, she says, don't even get me started. And like someone brought up, like I saw it online, which is probably what you guys were going to raise, is that, like, that it's the daughter of George and Gracie, because of like the lifespan of whales, it works out just perfectly. And it's just
also likely, her name. Yeah. Her name's Gillian. She was named Gillian. after the doctor.
Of course.
And it works out. The lifespan of a humpback whale is generally 80 to 90 years, no problem. That's just normal. And the voyage home was 2286, and this is 2383.
Yeah.
So it works out 97 years old.
So she's an old whale, but...
She's an old whale, but we also know that in the future, human lives are a lot longer because medical science, etc., is prolonged, where what we call old age now has become middle-aged.
Well, exactly.
In that. So she may just be middle-aged, so she may still have another 50 or 60 years on her.
Very true.
Best legacy character ever.
I think that's a good one.
It's a great little Easter egg legacy character.
Delicious.
Yeah.
And so polite as well. She even says at one stage, they're in her gaff, essentially. That's where she lives. Yeah. And she goes, oh, I'm sorry for eavesdropping. It's like,
yeah,
they came into your home and you're saying that. You were raised right by those whales and by that scientist.
And Jodie's messaged us saying Voyager fans would have picked up on the Chakotay spiral as he was an entity in cathexis. Yes, that classic season one Chakotay centric episode.
I don't even remember something called
Cathexis. It's about episode 8 or something. And Chakotay goes into a coma and B'Elanna sets him up a medicine wheel. And there's a mysterious entity, and it's because Chakotay's spirit walking and he's communicating with the crew through.
Because that's the traditional. Do we call them Native Americans?
Native American, yeah.
Culture that he talks about. Of course
it is. Yeah. We will put a pin in that until we find out what the thing that Murph has drawn actually is. But we will bear that in mind because, yes, I did, first time watching it, think, oh, is this a Chakotay, Hakuchi, Moya load of rubbish again? And then I remembered, oh, no, because they actually have cultural advisors now on TV shows, so they wouldn't something like that.
You said, was it Chakotay? Did you say Moyle? Because I believe that relates to his Moya culture. Oh, sorry. Although you said Moyle, it's like, well, he was advised by, as we've made many mention of, by a Jewish advisor who's not Native American at all. So he had cultural advisors, just it was...
He did. They actually check the CVs of the cultural advisors these days.
Again, they could have brought back any character and they pick the most problematic character.
We are going to say this over and over again for the rest of our lives, I think, but I still find it amazing when we did When Trek Goes Wrong the first time at Sci-Fi Weekender. And the lady in the audience stood up and apologized for the Jewish community. On behalf of the Jewish community.
she is always welcome at any of our events. Like, you know, I want her to come back so I can give her some.
She need not apologize.
No. And I just want to say, Georgie is wrong.
We do not love Chakotay. Name one good Chakotay-centric episode.
Are we allowed to name Prodigy episodes?
No. Name one good Chakotay-centric episode from Voyager. And if you find one and you put it in the comments, and this goes for anybody, we will hold our hands up and we'll say, yes, that is a good Chakotay-centric episode.
Oh, when he was going through the different time zones.
You're not playing. You're not playing. So that's the one I thought of as well.
Yeah, that's it. I was going to say that might be the only one.
To be fair, that's about 3 episodes from the end of season 7. So it took them a while to get there.
They got it in there, though. They got it in there.
Anyway.
Name one other episode is what we're saying.
We've given you one to get you started.
Yeah.
Now you've got to find the other one. And it's not that one where he boxes.
Oh, bloody hell, no. I was just thinking of that one because it's like, that was really, I mean, it was just tenuously bringing Boothby for the sake of it.
It's Boothby playing Mick off Rocky. It's utterly bizarre.
Yeah, it's kind of funny in itself. I mean, it's funny.
And it's definitely not the one where Kate gets off with a monkey.
No. That's a Janeway episode, I'd say. Yeah. Anyway, basically the glyph, they find out it does relate to Chakotay because it's from a planet and Chakotay used to live there and he's still in the database. And that's how they work out that it's related to Chakotay. Meanwhile, Admiral Jellicoe, who makes a return, and it's still Ronnie Cox, so great to have him back.
What I am impressed with is that, and not just with Prodigy, but Lower Decks, Picard, whenever they brought back a legacy character, apart from E-Chep, which they killed straight away, they have used the legacy, the actor who played the
original. Yeah, wherever possible, they definitely have.
Like, we can fully understand why they recast Nuno, was it, for E-Chep?
Manu
into Rayme.
That's it, Manu. We can fully understand why he was recast, but hands up to them that they've done really well to get the same actors back.
By and large,
If you want to use the character.
And I also love the fact that I do feel like, and we'll see this in episodes to come, how it really shows how the relationship between Janeway and how she deals with Jellicoe is different from how Picard does. It's just nice to see those kind of differences. And I think just the writing for Janeway, I always liked Janeway, but there were these moments, like she spoke about the fact they always wanted to do something with the hair. She was going, just leave it. It's like, why does anyone care what I'm doing with my hair? And there were things like that, which kind of got in the way a little bit during the 90s version of Janeway. Whereas here, having got rid of all that and just having her being this wonderful, strong character is just wonderful. Okay, Sky Spirit from
Jerome.
I don't recall an episode called Sky Spirit.
No,
we're not counting that one. We're only counting actual episodes of Voyager that feature Chakotay, not made up ones.
I think we're going to spend a lot of time tonight saying, Jordy, you're wrong.
Quite possibly.
Yeah, Jody, look, you got in early with a really good comment. We all loved it. Yeah. Don't ruin it now.
So, they need Rock's help to understand Murph, and this leads to Murph going underwater and Gillian can translate, which I thought was a lovely use of Murph and bringing Gillian into it as well. And I love how Murph just kind of morphs when he gets into the water and grows fins. And really liked that.
Also, we need to cover the Doctor and his mentorship. The bit where he appears and goes, please state the nature of the mentor emergency.
The mentoring emergency, yeah.
And just the way they play up. They've done it perfectly. I think the involvement in this series, genuinely, I think is the right amount. He comes in. He's mostly playing for laughs. He gets a couple of kind of serious scenes, but mostly he is that comic relief and he's well used as that. You don't overuse him because that could get overplayed. But just the fact that they've got Zero saying, it's like, okay, I think I know how to solve this, but it's not going to be it's not going to be pretty. It's like, tell me more about your writing, Doctor. It's like, oh, I'm so glad you asked. You owe me one for this. It's great.
Yeah, it gives
for the Vulcan to do the same.
What I was going to say. It becomes this running gag that you just flatter the Doctor's ego a little bit efficient.
But that plays on what we saw in Voyager, that it was very easy to
It does, absolutely, yeah.
It's very easy to play with his ego.
Yeah.
And also throw in, to my point, it's like the amount of roles, which there's a lot of main roles, but there's also a lot of kind of secondary roles in this series. And the way they balanced all the ingredients, like I say, with the Doctor, but that's true of all the characters. Every character is used the perfect amount. That's not easy to balance sometimes.
Like the Doctor, as an example, would be, if you'd never seen Voyager, it's still a funny performance from Robert Picardo, and you would just accept it as, he's this hologram character who's funny. and that's good enough. But then for people who have seen Voyager and loved the Doctor, because the Doctor was awesome, I could name you some good Doctor episodes. Then it's more of a treat for people who know who the Doctor is. Basically, they don't want to close the wormhole as Jellicoe's ordered them, but they do ultimately.
Again, you just think when all of them come up and go, it's like,
you think, you know, it's going to be one of them to hell with our orders.
We'll do what you say. And she goes, thank you, I appreciate that. That her line when she says that and leaves the bridge is just such a powerful moment. She delivers it perfectly. The animation is perfect of her walking off. Because again, it's like, it's sometimes with animation, I think it if it's not done exactly right, you can like lose the drama moment. But it was just all perfectly put together, that bit. Jodie, I love the simulator episode when they use sound bites for the late actors and gave a tribute. I still renew my issue with it. I still don't like the fact they didn't bounce sound clips, including Leonard Nimoy was used from different performances. So his age went older and younger. That did take me out, but it is generally a really
good episode. It's a great episode. It's not a Chakotay episode, but it is a great episode. Tattoo season 2. That's what I thought she meant by Sky Spirits. And no, that is an awful episode.
You are wrong in so many ways.
It's utterly terrible. What you, from memory, and I've not watched it in a while, they find a lost tribe of Native Americans in the Delta Quadrant and discover that Chakotay's tribe had spread out to another part of the galaxy, and they all worship this mystical being, and his grandfather's
talking to him in spirit form.
That's it. His granddad talking to him.
And within that, they had a really interesting storyline they could have done about dimension, how it affects someone, how it robs someone, how it's kind of like so haunted, how that does worry someone about the future, but. Rourke Beltram's performance in that is so hammy when he's going, "Damn you, grandfather!" It's like it's almost Shatner, but without being as fun.
You know what? I think this is a rule of TV. If you feel the need to make an episode about how a character got a tattoo, it's not going to be a good episode. See also that one in Lost where Jack goes and flies a kite and failing.
It says, I'm belong here, but I'm not one of you. Sort of some build like that. It's when they were trying to work out how they were going to do the rest of the show.
Yeah, they were treading water. They were like, we've only got so much story for X number of episodes, but you want 22 this season and we haven't got enough.
But thank God they did work out where they were going. It was absolutely
resplendent. But yeah, Jack flying a kite. That episode of The X-Files where Scully gets the tattoo, that's not the greatest episode. And I'm sure we could go on, but we won't.
You're making a good case. I mean, well, the one exception, of course, when they did it every week was Prison Break. First series of that magic.
Yeah, to be fair, he got all the tattoos immediately. He had them
explained them all week to week.
You're right, it did. Right. There you go. Yeah. Prison Break is the exception. But even that dropped the ball with Prison Break season 5, where he had the tattoos on his hands and then he put them over his face and it tricked a facial recognition camera. Come on.
They basically lost it after the first series. The first series was great. And then it was like, oh, after we've lost our tattoo thing, which was the most interesting part, what do we do now? And the second season was all right, but then it really lost it.
Season 2, they did try to carry that on, didn't they? Because they were like, oh, I've got tattooed on my arm, where I've hidden my weapons for when we escape. And they tried it a little bit.
It was all right in the second series, but after that, it was just like...
Yeah, we're not going to do a Prison Break podcast because... nah. Anyway, they close the wormhole and Gwyn turns off like her temporal stabilizer, which lets her go on a bit of a trip into the... Ooh.
Just very quickly, even the moment when they do destroy the wormhole, I thought it was so nicely done where they hold on it for a second so you think that somehow it's going to power up the wormhole or it's not going to get destroyed. I thought the way they held it really tricked me.
Actually, how they did the animation, I thought there was actually a beam coming in from the side to destroy the Quantum Torpedoes.
Ooh, that'd have been interesting. Yeah.
And I thought, and I the first time watching, and I thought, oh, is this that alien ship again, or that entity that told them that they couldn't go in yet and stuff? Ooh,
yeah, I thought that as well at the time. Yeah, it's like, is it stopping them from going on the wrong course?
But then it blew up.
Yeah, but like, to give them credit, just like to hold that just long enough to make you second guess yourself was just very nice.
Yeah.
Again, it's all about the pacing with the show.
It was literally a split second of animation, but it just put thoughts in my head at the time.
Yeah, same here. And did we have the flashback to Janeway and Chakotay in the past yet?
No, I think that's a little bit later, isn't it? I'm not sure. We'll get that.
Yeah.
And then Gwyn discovers that the spiral is a map, and that's setting us all up going forward. At least it's not a Discovery-style map where you have to find the five other clues so you can ascend it, assemble it. But
what, you mean the teabag and t-shirt plot lines?
Yeah, which we've still got to do, Retrek Goes Teabagging. We should do that as a live episode next week.
I'm fucking in.
I know all our episodes are live, but anyway, we'll come back to that. So the next episode, Imposter Syndrome, then. And it starts with my least favorite thing, which is the something happens 24 hours earlier. Though this one isn't as egregious as some of the other ones that we've talked about.
This one, I think, is nicely done. And again, it's okay if they earn it. It's only if there's no reason to do that other than they think it's a makes it more interesting way of into the episode. Like this one, I think, like there is a bit of a mystery about how they get to there. I didn't mind this at all. But yeah, it's a very young,
yeah, it's at least an interesting setup, this one. It's like, why have they turned on Dal, or why have they seemingly turned on Dal?
But it is one of those things that is it really necessary in the episode?
No, it's completely.
I don't think there's how the episode progresses. I don't think this sort of flash forward at the beginning brings anything to the episode at all.
It doesn't really.
In fact, it probably ruins later on that, you know, oh, the gunners fall out and all that.
Yeah, soon as the idea of the holograms are introduced, you contextualize what you've seen at the start of the episode and you can predict where it's going to go.
At least I'll give you that I actually, when I saw this beginning bit, I gave a shit why it was happening. Whereas
Michael and the
chip, I just didn't. It was like just another token action scene. And even when you saw it later, it was like, oh, that's just her on that. Like there's no
reveal from that.
There's no big thing, you know. Yeah.
No, this is one of the better ones. I agree. And what I also appreciate is that when we go back to it, we do different camera angles and we edit it differently. So you're not literally just watching the same thing again.
I imagine it's a lot easier to do in animation than live action. And even live action, because let's face it, a lot of the live action, like let's look at surfing on a spaceship in Discovery, is the most recent example we've got in Star Trek prior to this. But even when you're doing that with CGI, I imagine that's a lot harder to do different angles than it is to just draw it differently with animation. And you can just manipulate the whole animation easier.
Yeah, I don't know. I imagine both. It really depends how it's done, doesn't it? But either way, I appreciate
you'd have to shoot Sonic from different angles. And if you're using
massive
back screens, but if you're using them huge back screens now,
yeah, like that's the Star Wars thing.
You couldn't do it.
No, I agree.
Behind and all that.
I mean, yeah, it's easier to do with a green screen if you're using the, like you say, the big backdrops.
Either way, I appreciate that. So even though it's a trope I don't like, this is possibly the best version of something I don't like. So the bad news is that they think they've worked out where Chakotay is. So we're off to find
They're
Chakotay.
They're going to have to go find him out.
They are going to have to go find Chakotay.
I'm going to say, I think he's a lot more enjoyable in this series than he was.
I think he is as well.
Yeah. He is, but let's face it, if this season hadn't been made so long ago, in view of what he's done in the last year, we may have killed him off earlier.
I honestly think with the stuff he said before, he'd already said some shady stuff. And again, the character's so problematic. I'm just really surprised this is the one they chose to read. I mean, yeah, it's very well for Janeway, isn't it?
But
it's almost like a redemption story for his character, not for him.
Yeah.
No, this is, I mean, to be fair, Chakotay, how he's been featured specifically in this episode, is my favourite Chakotay. Absent MacGuffin Chakotay is fine. But
the scene where I'm going to talk about just because we're on the tip. The scene which we do get where you see him flashing back with the kind of like stuff unsaid between him and Janeway. Yeah. That's really nice. Like, there's this. I mean, again, I've got to talk about the animation around Janeway because, like, there's a bit where she kind of like melts a little bit when she gets given the thing. And it's just, it's so perfectly done. So she melts just for a second and then she recomposes herself. Whereas like I think his performance in this is pretty decent, but like his animation is very stiff. I wish they'd kind of made the guys a bit.
Yeah. A bit
more it is. Well, we have said that with any alien race to look a lot better than any humans.
Aliens and females seem to look better than men in this.
Yeah.
Yeah, true. Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, so the plan is we're gonna steal or borrow the Infinity, but we'll make people think we're still here by making holograms. But then the complication is...
Well, no, they get the idea of holograms because the Doctor's been mentoring.
Exactly, there you go. And the complication is that the Infinity's scheduled to be destroyed in a rather bizarre way. Like, what should we do? Should we just blow it up with the photon torpedo? Should we set the auto-destruct? No, what we'll do is fly it into a blue star.
Because Chakotay like blue stars.
Apparently. Is that in the episode Tattoo as well, that he likes blue stars?
They just had a blue star nearby. It felt apt. Like, you know, get off their case. Come on. They just happened to have a blue star there. Like, they wanted to save...
Like,
and look, you did not see the scene where
I'm going to hold my hands up here. I am not the biggest Chakotay fan, so I may have missed where he said how in all seven seasons of Voyager where he loves blue stars. But I'm sure Geordi, who's the Chakotay aficionado, can tell us exactly where he previously said how much he loves blue stars. And as a tribute, he wants whatever it is to be involved with blue star for his death.
Well, let me start with, I'm glad I was sat down before you said you weren't a fan of Chakotay. I've never picked up on that from you or Jim before. Never has that ever come onto the show. Anyway. But what I'm going to say is, the scene which you guys are obviously like, you know, unlike me, you haven't got the direct line to Paramount when I get them to send me all the cutscenes. You're aware of this,
of course,
now. And there was, of course, the cutscene where Jones from Accounts came up and said, it's like, your use of photon torpedoes is going through the roof. You're just spanking the budget. Like, look, we already built the time ship. Do you know how much that cost? Look. So you're going to have to cut back.
Sorry.
If you've got to kill someone, I want you to send them into some star. And if it happens to be their favourite type is blue, you know, so be it. All the better.
I'm sorry. I have watched seven seasons of Voyager multiple times because I do happen to really love that series. And I can tell you, Voyager had absolutely no issue whatsoever in torpedo loops.
No, they didn't. That's clearly the thing, is that
why
now Janeway
is up their ass about this.
Yeah.
Like, when they came back to the Alpha Quarter, it's like,
you mean,
oh,
she
my God, we sent you out with all this stuff. You've got rid of half of it. Like, I mean, I know you had to survive.
It won't actually. She got rid of it four times over. But that's it, because we all know that the original Voyager had a hydroponics bay that grew photon torpedoes, and maybe this one doesn't, and that's why they can't just throw them away. Now, something that I really, really liked here, and I think this may be the first time it's ever happened on Star Trek, is the Doctor and Janeway are going to find the crew, and they're on the holodeck, and Janeway knocks and says, "Can I come in?" And that never, ever, ever happens. People just breeze into people's private holodeck. Yeah. Now, I
wonder if this is something that's come on since when we saw Voyager and TNG, and because of things that we're seeing in Lower Decks, where we know that people do have sexual fantasies on the holodeck.
Yeah, maybe.
Because it's a clean-up thing. That it's become, like, there's maybe something that's happened off-screen on another ship.
Right, yeah,
Captain just barged in. Well, one of the crew was having a massive gangbang for fun.
Yeah, that's it. There was like a holodeck Me Too movement.
With his inappropriate fantasy.
Yeah, and it's been, no, you must now always not before you enter a holodeck. You are not allowed.
If nothing else, for your own sanity and your own eyes.
It should have always been that.
Yeah.
It should have always been that way. But there's obviously something has happened that made it that way. And from the difference, what we see, what happened from Lower Decks, what happens on holodecks compared to what we saw in Voyager and actually not so much Voyager, because Voyager implied that that could be done on holodecks. So, but definitely TNG, apart from the Barclay episodes where it was implied that he was doing that with the other officers.
I mean, let's be honest, if someone invented a holodeck, that'd be the first thing that'd be done on it.
But I mean, I will say that the whole thing with Barclay was always very ahead of its time, because it did address, like, there was a lot of shows which tend to sort of sidestep stuff like that, whereas I like the fact they addressed it head on. It's like someone could inappropriately use this, and we now see this with the
Fapping AI, report, yeah.
Like when someone hacks people's photos,
that
this is all kind of what very prophetically TNG addressed. The thing which I found weird, it's kind of funny you picked up on this, because the other bit I picked up on is when they don't answer for a minute, as opposed to saying, it's like, "Oh, get this open, I want to see what they're up to," kind of like not trusting them. Her instinct is like, "What if they're in trouble?" That I think is actually really nice. It's like,
yeah,
the first thing
really
is concern,
good.
Not blame, whereas like, well, any other episode, you know, it would have been like, don't waste my time, I want to get in there, like, I need to know what's happening in there.
Yeah, but that's sort of like, "Oh, I'm worried for them. I have an excuse to open the door." It's a bit like South Park where, "Oh, they're running right at us." That you have to say, the certain words.
Yeah, put it in my report that I said I was worried about them. And now we're off in.
Yeah. And it is, but it's almost like you've got to say the words to be allowed to open the door and force it.
But I will say, I think it's just really nice where there's so many. Like, I like the fact that they highlight, I think, in subtle ways like this, Janeway, as a female captain, it doesn't make her any less, but she does lead as a woman. I think the empathy is kind of always more on the surface.
And she's definitely maternal towards these kids, much more so than she was to her own lizard babies. But
oh, Harry Kim.
Yeah, but we won't really litigate that. Anyway, so what this leads to is they try and lock the holo duplicates in the holodeck, but they don't know which ones of them are real and which are holo characters. And we don't know, because visually they look identical. And my favourite element of the episode...
What I like is that they're programmed to act identical, but they've always also programmed Zero to be able to read the mind.
Yeah, that's cool.
Lovely touch. That's attention to detail, that is.
Yeah.
That's why I love the series. They think of everything, and that is so tight. That comes
my favourite element of the whole episode is obviously each individual knows whether they're real or not, except Jankum, who starts questioning it, because the other Jankum can also repair replicators, which I just thought that was just so... It's funny, it's ludicrous, but it's in character, and it works.
If you think about it, he's actually cleverer than anyone else on this front, because if you were the hologram, you wouldn't know. So he's actually, he's thinking on a higher level. If you really think
he's thinking on a lower level. He knows that he's him.
If he was a hologram, he would know he's real. It, like, because if they're programmed that sophisticatedly, so the other Jenkum knows that. Do you see what I mean?
Like, okay, that would assume that the holograms have all the prior memories as well.
Well, the way it's plotted is certainly that they're.
But yeah, if we accept that they do, then yes, you're right. You're right. Yeah,
it would. Like, it's kind of interesting.
Yeah, if the hologram believes himself to be Jenkum, then the real Jenkum technically doesn't know he's any more the real Jenkum. But I find it funny to think that it's Jenkum just that he's questioning it.
I think he's fallen backwards into it. I don't think he's doing it because he's more intelligent, but it is,
yeah,
funnily enough, quite prescient that he thought.
You're
that.
Right, I mean, yeah.
You've also got the two rocks. It's lovely that they're working together. Like,
yeah, it's great. Like,
and it's their kindness which actually wins the day, which I think is just beautiful and so stark.
Yeah.
And it's not over spiked the fact that that's the case, but that is.
And that's it. And that's how it gets resolved. The rocks come up with this idea to reset everything, and that'll do it. And I love the moment where you get Dal's worried and Gwyn holds his hand and that turns out not to be the real one.
Yeah.
But it doesn't make the gesture anymore.
No, it doesn't
poignant.
Make it. No.
You know, it's just a lovely moment.
And at the end, it is sort of like they're not all together, the real ones. Like, you know,
yeah, they weren't.
That's nicely done. So it's like no one really got it right. You know, it's like. It's
yeah. And Jankum's really over the moon when he realizes, oh, I am the real me.
This is the reason Jankum, like, they are all, like, it's a so close run, but Jankum Pog is just my favorite. Just because. And Jason Mantzoukas, who plays him, who's a wonderful comedic actor, but he always gives a line delivery just a little bit. Like, no one else would deliver it, I think, quite like he does.
No, he's great.
And that's such a skill, yeah.
Like, I really like, I preferred Murph at one point, but he's gone down because I liked him when he was just a blob.
I did as well, yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was better as just a blob as opposed to walking around now. And I think, no, you've sort of went into anthropomorphic and...
Yeah, I liked Murph as just a blob. Yeah, but you know what? It means you can buy your Murph action figure if they were making action figures, which they should have done.
That. I mean, but there's also a nice little moment when Jenkum's walking through the corridor and, like, when he's just found out or thinks that he's not real and, like, he walks past the counsellor, is it? He's a counsellor,
yeah,
isn't it? Yeah. And he's like, he goes like, what's up? Oh, well, nothing. Jenkum Pog just might not be real. Like, walks past and the guy goes, you know what? I'm too tired for this. Like, he goes into all the...
Yeah, I'm just off to relax.
And he takes the drink as well with him. It's just lovely little...
Yeah.
Nice little touch upon nice little touch.
And we get that, like, second beat of the thing with the doctor here, but this time it's Michelle who... intercepts him and distracts him, and you get this little sort of flirty moment between Zero and Michelle, which is really nice.
That they, I love their relationship. I love the way they brought her in, so that again, she's in most of it, but they do still give moments to the characters we've been following from the beginning. But they bring her into the crew very nicely, and it was the moment when she's talking to Zero, because they have a couple of kind of these flirty moments.
Yeah, they do.
The one where she basically says that she really likes him is a telepathic moment, which to me adds an extra level of intimacy. It makes me think of them, Zadi, and, you know, Troy.
Yeah, it does, definitely.
And I think if you are like that, that is an act of kind of intimacy to reach out to someone's mind, not just to speak to them. And it's just lovely. And it's just so nicely played.
Especially for a Vulcan to do it to a non-Vulcan is a big thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, I really like what they're doing with those characters. And then we wrap up, basically, don't we? Like,
Jodie's being... now redeeming herself a little bit.
Prefers Murph without the arms. Yes, yes. And we prefer Chakotay without the screen time.
Although, we will see him with stubble, which, spoiler alert, I like. Rugged Chakotay, I liked. I'm sorry, I just...
We shall get there. Chakotay might not come back, remember. We haven't seen
the episode. Sorry. Okay, it'll be good.
Yeah, we haven't seen it yet. No,
so, if he returns, maybe.
If Chakotay returns, maybe he'll have a beard, is exactly what you were saying.
Exactly what I was saying.
And yeah, so basically they steal slash borrow the Infinity, and the holograms, we find out right at the end, the stinger for the episode is the holograms have got the wrong personalities. So we're set up for a bit of a farce.
Can I quickly hopefully. Just throw in something on each of those? First of all, the I like the fact that when they go into the sun, they play it for a moment, but like I think it would be very tempting to play that as a big moment of like, will they go into the sun or not? Like there's whole episodes. I think it was an episode of Deep Space Nine where they were just locked in to go into the sun for a lot of the episode. I like the fact that it was just a brief mention because we've done that kind of before. And also the bit where they do have the voice changes, they must have had so much fun doing each other's voices. I bet that must have been the most fun day in the office.
Well, it's not a voice change. They've all got the right voices. They're just acting...
That's what
like
I'm saying.
The other character.
And I thought that must have been so fun.
Yeah, I thought it was really, really well done. And hopefully, we don't know, but hopefully we'll get a bit more of that in future episodes.
And I don't think any of them dropped the ball. I think all of them were good impressions of each other when they were doing each other's voices.
Yeah.
And hopefully, they'll hold up the pretense long enough for the real Prodigy crew to go save everyone.
Well, let's hope so. Or maybe they'll keep the pretense up long enough for the Prodigy crew not to find Chakotay, and then they have to come back and they never find him.
Ooh, it turns out the whole thing was on the holodeck. None of it happened. It's actually we're still in the last episode of Enterprise.
You mean none of it? You mean none of it happened like every other time travel episodes from Voyager?
Yeah.
Oh God! There's every type of time travel in this series, and I'm just loving every moment of it. Like they really do every theory of time travel they ever done in Star Trek in one season of Prodigy. It's just
as we said. Like these first six have been great.
You know what I really enjoying
just about,
this,
to get better and better.
There's something I don't want to say, and it does carry on through the whole series. But what's really, really clever with this season is it's a continuous story arc. Episode 1 to episode 20 is one story. Mm-hmm. But every single episode, you could watch alone, and it's a different style in a way.
Yeah, that
you can watch every episode of this. Every episode is self-contained as cartoons for kids should be, but every single episode runs through the entire story.
Yeah,
really well done is that. That doesn't happen often.
There's smaller movements within the larger story, and it really works.
Yeah.
We'll wrap up there then, but next week we'll be back on a different day. No, it's the week after. Next week's a normal week.
No, next week's Thursday because
next week's Thursday. I'm getting the week mixed up. Next week we'll be back on Thursday instead of Wednesday, and we'll be
sometime around 8-ish, maybe. It's going to be later.
Later, most likely. We will keep you informed.
8-ish, because we're all going to be together.
And we're going to be at pre-Destination Trek.
With some first appearances from the likes of Jodie, who you've heard commenting throughout this episode.
She's not coming on, she's talking about Chakotay.
She isn't, she's bad. We'll make her stand in a corner on her own.
You know what? I'm just going to stand between you two and her just so she can do just 5 minutes in Chakotay before we move on.
So, yeah, we may have guests. We may even, we could go down to the hotel where Destination Trek's going to kick off and see what we find down there. So stay tuned. It could be a crazy episode next week. In the meantime, you can get in touch with us. We're at RetrekPod on X. We're RetrekPod@gmail.com. We're all over the different socials, including Retrek Model Studios on YouTube,
where I put out the last episode of the Gundam build at the weekend. I'm not sure if the other episode that I had to go along with it is going to be done. I think I'll redo it in a future date better. I'm not sure where I'm going to go next with something building, because if you didn't know already, I've just bought a new house, so I've got to pack everything up here. And I'm packing, and there's going to be a new model studio, purely designated for model building. So things might get quiet for 2 or 3 months. There may be the odd video come out. I'll see what I can
Fair
do.
Fair enough.
If things are very quiet, that is the reason, because I've got to pack up and I've got to unpack.
And Dr. Squee, what have we got going on the Dr. Squee show?
Well, we finally broke the dams and we're back, like, putting the episodes out, which I've been promising for ages. So last week we had William Russell, tribute to the late great actor. This week, Sarah Pembroke, finally, where she talks about, amongst many other things, the new version of her book, Insomnia, which has just become a major Paramount Plus TV show, as well as her other Netflix show, as well as all her books, of course, and her old journey. She is so funny. So, like, genuinely, I've been really looking forward to sharing this one, because she just... she's one of these people who just she'll just tell it how it is, and it's just really
Yeah, she's great. And apparently we're all just jealous because Chakotay is yummy. Yes, oh, that's the reason.
As an Easter egg, I'll be recording the front and back links to the interview with Sarah Pembroke.
Can I just say,
I'm not just wearing the same outfit tomorrow that I worn today when you watch at 7.
Can I just say, If Geordi isn't dressed as Chakotay for Destination Trek, I will take a Sharpie with me, so she will be.
That's an instant Chakotay costume. Oh, yeah.
And I want your hair like his as well, Jody. You've got to do your hair like his.
Anyway, so until we see you next time, go fast.
Go fast.